From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. On today's program, Florida's infant mortality rate is at an all-time low. The same decline in infant deaths is being recorded nationally. What are we doing right, and what can we do to see the numbers go down even more? We're joined by representatives from Florida's Healthy Start Coalition. Also on today's program, Florida Gulf Coast University's baseball players are getting lots of attention. A record number are already playing in the minor leagues after being drafted this spring. We're joined by FGCU's head baseball coach, Dave Tollett. And Talk of the Nation has been a fixture on most public radio stations in this country since 1991. It ends this week. Longtime host Neil Conan joins us to reflect on the show and what comes next for him. First, this news. From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Valerie Alker. On today's program, a conversation with the longtime host of NPR's Talk of the Nation, Neil Conan. The program sunsets this week. He talks to Amy Tardiff about his time with NPR and what's next. Also, Florida Gulf Coast University's baseball players are hot and on recruiters' radar. Head coach Dave Tollett joins us. But first, Florida's infant mortality rate is at an all-time low. Numbers released by the State Department of Health this month indicate the number of babies who died during their first year of life is 6 in 1,000, down from 6.4 in 2011. Nationally, the rate of infant mortality is declining as well. Joining us about this positive development are three guests, all associated with the Florida Department of Health. Kathy Tamuda is Executive Director of Healthy Start of Southwest Florida. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you for having me.
And also on the line from Tallahassee, Dr. Cheryl Clark, Senior Epidemiologist with the Division of Community Health Promotion. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And also Margaret Rankin, RN, Executive Community Health Nursing Director, also with the Division of Community Health Promotion. Welcome to you, Margaret.
Good morning.
And we welcome your input as well. You can join our conversation. Listeners, call 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can send an email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. I was looking at some numbers, and Florida's infant mortality rate is right about the national average. The government report also revealed numbers nationally have declined significantly, in some cases as much as 12% in the last decade. So what are we doing right? And Dr. Clark, let's start with you.
The main reason for the decline in Florida is that there are fewer babies being born at very, very low birth weight, namely under 1,000 grams, which is almost about maybe less than 1.5 pounds. When babies are born at that very, very low birth weight, the infant mortality rate for them is very high. So if we have less babies born at that very, very low birth weight, and we will see a subsequent decrease in infant mortality.
Kathy Tamuda with Head Start, which was launched by Lawton Childs in the early 90s with the goal of reducing infant mortality. You've been with Healthy Start since 1999. Do you know if similar coalitions have been launched in other states?
Well, my understanding, I don't have a lot of knowledge at the national level. I do know there are federally funded Healthy Start projects. And they're more in targeted areas. I believe that Florida is unique in having Healthy Start available statewide for its residents.
And Margaret Rankin, you're a nurse with the Division of Healthcare Promotion. What are the eligibility requirements for Healthy Start? Can undocumented women feel secure in seeking out a Healthy Start program?
All women are eligible to be in Healthy Start. The women and infants are, offered screening, during their pregnancy visits with their providers, and the infants at the birthing centers.
Dr. Clark, you already mentioned the fact that the reason we're seeing such a significant decline in infant mortality is due to less babies being born premature at very low rates. That's within the first 28 days. Is that correct?
Well, usually if infants, you know, the neonatal, which is less than 28 period days, is when the majority of infant mortality, the deaths in the first year do occur, and namely for babies who are born extremely premature or at a very low birth weight, those are usually the high-risk periods for them. And also I do want to add, not only are there fewer babies being born at very, very low birth weights, but also the survival of infants that are born at low birth weights is better, is improving across time.
What role does Healthy Start play in increasing, reducing the number of early births and low birth rate babies, or low weight babies?
Well, Healthy Start, this is Kathy Tanucha speaking. Healthy Start is designed to address the birth outcomes. We have the risk screen in place that identifies your high-risk families, and then the Healthy Start Home visitors can go into the home and assess the unique needs of each of the families. Because every family is different. Some may need help with food and shelter. Some may need help getting insurance or getting to the doctor. So we address the unique risk factors or needs of each family that helps reduce the likelihood that the baby has a poor outcome. We also provide standardized education in the home on parenting and baby care and safe sleep, and again, all addressing risk factors that help the family have a better chance of giving their baby a healthy start in life.
So, Kathy, with Healthy Start, you're the director here in Southwest Florida. So how many people do you have going out and going into homes and, you know, talking to expectant moms and letting them know, you know, what to watch out for to avoid, you know, going into premature labor and stuff like that? Do you have a network of people throughout the community who are identifying these women and doing what you can to help?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you used the word network, as it really does take a variety of partners in order to address infant mortality. But we have about 40 to 45 home visitors in the Florida County area, which includes Collier, Glades, Hendry, and Lee. And they provide care coordination and home visiting services. So we also have telephone-based services through our mom care, and we have four ladies there that help pregnant women who are on Medicaid.
And you mentioned something, I believe, Dr. Clark, about sudden infant death syndrome. That was on the list as had previously been one of the greatest causes of infant mortality, also known as SIDS. I remember hearing PSAs on the radio some time ago by Mary Chapin Carpenter, I believe, and it was, you know, the back-to-bed campaign, putting the baby to sleep on its back. That's worked?
Well, we definitely are trying to address what we call sleep-related deaths, and SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, being one of those types of deaths within the sleep-related category. So it's almost like a universal precautions. If we promote, you know, placing your baby, you know, on his or her back to sleep, and also being alone in a sleeping space, you know, in a safe sleep environment, whether that be a crib, you know, or another safe environment, and some other things that the American Academy of Pediatrics published in guidelines, we will help to reduce SIDS and other sleep-related deaths.
And I understand, Margaret Rankin, in some cultures, it's normal for the infant to sleep with the mother, especially if the mother is nursing the baby. But that's something you're trying to discourage, because that can also lead to sleep related death.
Yes, we do encourage, you know, to you know, put the baby in alone in a crib or in another safe sleep environment.
This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. The topic is infant mortality. The trend is positive. We welcome your calls. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. When mothers leave the hospital or birthing center, do they get a briefing on, or a booklet or something on sudden infant death syndrome?
Yes, they do. We provide quite a bit of information at both the prenatal medical care clinics and at the hospital. We have educational bags. And the hospitals also have their own information that they pass out. But we are, you know, we make every effort to make sure every new mother has a brochure on safe sleep in particular, along with other information on how to take care of their baby, their newborn.
Another leading cause of birth defects I read about is another leading cause of infant mortality I read about is birth defects. And I've seen posters on the roadway in Spanish talking about folic acid. Can prenatal vitamins help prevent birth defects by, you know, getting the proper number, the proper vitamins into the expectant mother? And I know spina bifida is an outcome of not having folic acid. And what foods and stuff are you advising women to eat as well as taking vitamins? I guess, Kathy.
All right. Well, of course, we encourage all pregnant women, strongly encourage them to be taking their prenatal medical vitamins, and we help them get access to it if they don't have the financial resources. We also encourage moms, because the majority of fetal and infant deaths are due to the health of the mother before she gets pregnant. So we are encouraging women to take a multivitamin before they get pregnant. You know, just get into the habit of taking a vitamin every day. It's really important in helping to prevent birth defects.
How about
the type? Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, that's it for now.
What about good eating habits? I mean, taking a vitamin pill, can that really make up for, you know, spending the rest of your time, you know, eating not so healthy food?
Well, no, you can't be eating McDonald's every day and take a multivitamin and have it balanced. But we spend quite a bit of time with our clients and educating them on good nutrition, and we have great partnerships in the community with the WIC program, et cetera. So we make sure all of our moms are able to access WIC. And there's a lot of education as well as free food that they can get through that program that's healthy.
How big a role does educating mothers about risky behavior during pregnancy play in reducing birth defects? And I'm thinking of fetal alcohol syndrome and things of this nature. Margaret?
Well, we just encourage women, you know, as Kathy was stating, to be healthy before they get pregnant. And, you know, that we do, you know, mention that it is important, you know, not to, you know, to drink alcohol while you're pregnant.
I remember doing some reporting quite a few years ago about the crack baby epidemic. Now we have had... Florida has been notorious for prescription pill drug abuse. Is that something that you also are addressing, that? And I guess, you know, smoking marijuana and things like that.
That's a huge issue in Southwest Florida. We've seen just a gigantic increase in the number of substance-exposed newborns. And babies going through withdrawal when after they're born. And we've got some great local task forces, one in Lee County and one in Collier County. That's multi-agency, really looking at a big picture of how to make a dent in this problem. And, you know, it's a very tough, you've got two different populations. You've got women who legitimately need to be taking medication, whether it's for pain or other medical reason, and cannot stop during their pregnancy, and they're going to need some help in managing that those levels during their pregnancy and managing the baby when it gets born and is going through withdrawal. You also have the more difficult population that are your drug addicts and that are not really ready to stop. So, you know, it's a very diverse population that we're having to deal with the substance-exposed newborn issue, but we do have some great action plans that are on the drawing board and that we're working toward, but we're not quite ready to announce those plans yet.
And at the state level, what's being done to, I guess, address prescription drug abuse among expectant mothers leading to drug-addicted babies, which I guess can also make it difficult to bond with the baby and can lead to other problems down the road?
Well, as far as educating women about preconception health and the importance, you know, of, being healthy and, you know, not smoking or drinking or, you know, or using illicit drugs is important for preconception health, you know, to be prior to pregnancy. And so that is one thing that we, you know, encourage.
You know, some birth defects are inherited. Is there anything other than termination that can be done to prevent these babies from being born? I'm thinking of Down syndrome and things of this nature. Like preconception genetic counseling, if there's a genetic issue that's been detected in the family, things of this nature, is that something that Healthy Start gets involved in?
No, we don't. But we're in the business of helping pregnant women and babies and the families. If they need help finding those resources, we can certainly. That's a lot of what we do is help families find community resources. So we'll help them find another program or agency that provides the genetic testing, but we do not do that ourselves in the homes. But our job is to link families with the resources that they need.
I see.
And, of course, all the education around how to prevent to the best of the ability by taking vitamins and a healthy lifestyle and to prevent the birth defects. Is, you know, we're all about prevention.
Right. Well, I agree.
Okay. What role do maternal complications play in infant mortality, Dr. Clark?
Well, that's such it plays an important role, and it's a very, very broad category. Basically, anything that, you know, incurs with the mother. It could be she's experiences external trauma, or there's something biologically going on with her that conflicts with, you know, the baby, you know, the in utero. So it's pretty broad, and what getting women into prenatal care early helps to kind of monitor any situations that may arise. Of course, we can't prevent all accidents and traumas and other things that have been discussed, but getting that woman into prenatal care and having her monitored by a medical provider and with experience and also with looking at different conditions can help curtail any risk that may arise.
One thing I know I've had some experience with is high blood pressure during pregnancy, especially during older moms. Is that something which can create a problem for both the mom and the baby? Is that something that when you're looking at maternal complications that kind of goes to the top of the list?
Sure, you know, it could preeclampsia is a condition, and also when a woman's eclamptic, you know, high blood pressure is bad for anyone, woman pregnant or not, and definitely does lead to complications in when she is carrying a child, and also leads to sometimes preterm delivery. So we definitely, you know, monitor all chronic conditions, and what's been said, you know, repeatedly throughout our conversation today is that if we can help, preconception health improve, and that means includes addressing chronic conditions such as hypertension and other obesity, you know, and all that, and those related things. And the older a woman gets, of course, she's at more risk for developing those conditions based on, you know, whatever's gone on before. So we definitely want to have women be as healthy as they can be, as well as the rest of our population.
Another cause that was listed for infant mortality is unintentional injuries. What? That was kind of vague. I didn't really understand that. What are they, and what do you do to help prevent them?
Well, one of the leading causes of unintentional injuries can be co-sleeping, and we talked a little bit about that earlier under safe sleep. You know, rates in the nation have quadrupled over the last 20 years. You know, there's just a lot. I know when I was a mom, I was told it was best to have my baby in the bed with me, you know, bonding and sleeping and breastfeeding. And so, you know, mothers have been getting mixed messages over the years, and a lot of our current mommies get their information from their mom. So we are spending a lot of education in the community and on TV, et cetera, trying to tell families that there is a high risk of accidental suffocation and death if you sleep with your baby. Other unintentional injuries can also be leaving your baby to sleep on the sofa or in a bed, basically on any unsafe surface. They can accidentally smother and suffocate and die. So we, you know, encourage families to have a separate bed or separate place for the baby to sleep, but still in the same room with mom when it's a newborn.
So when is it safe to start sleeping with your baby? Is there a cutoff date? Is it 3 months or it's 6 months? Or I guess it's 6 months. The baby's probably into having its own space. Do you have a time recommendation that you put out there to moms and expectant moms?
Well, in our education in the home, we encourage the baby to always have a separate bed. I'm not aware, maybe Dr. Clark knows of a cutoff, you know, I wouldn't say, I'm going to guess not sooner than a year, but we always encourage the baby for multiple reasons to have a separate bed. Mom gets a better night's sleep.
And you,
yes, and this is Dr. Clark, and I wouldn't say we have a cutoff. We just would recommend, you know, the alone to sleep on the baby's back. But, of course, more deaths occur in the very early life, you know, because more people will sleep with their infants when they're newborns. So, but that doesn't mean it's safe to sleep with them when they pass that first 28 days. We definitely want them to be alone, but sharing a room, as Kathy said, but not necessarily sharing a bed.
How do numbers break down by race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status of infant mortality? They've improved across all groups, but are there still some groups where babies are more vulnerable than others?
Go ahead, Kathy.
No, that's okay. Once you get the statewide perspective, that would be nice.
Okay, well, there's definitely, you know, increase mortality amongst the black population, and that's nationally as well. And even though, like you said, the infant mortality rates have gone down, we're doing the things we do to address that are things we're going to do to address what we've been saying all along, is improve preconception health and the health of the mom, and also get her into prenatal care so we can monitor any situations that are occurring.
And Kathy, in Southwest Florida?
In Southwest Florida, we'll just take a look at our two larger counties. Both Collier County has a triple racial disparity gap in infant mortality, meaning the black rate is 12.7 in Collier for 1,000 babies, and it's 3.0 for white babies. So there's quite a large gap, and also there is a little more than a 2-times gap for Lee County, and our black babies in both counties are higher than the average for black babies in the state of Florida. So we do have some challenges for racial disparity in our area. And, you know, the education is really the same, but it's just reaching a different population. When you look at racial disparity, you know, the primary causes from a national study are, you know, really the primary cause is premature birth, the disparity there. SIDS and birth defects and unintentional injuries come in second, third, and fourth, but at a much smaller percentage. Really, the gap is in the premature birth rate.
We speak of the Healthy Start Coalition. A coalition signals a group. Margaret, who are the members of the coalition that are working together?
Well, and there are 31 Healthy Start coalitions and 2 county health departments that implement the Healthy Start program activities throughout the state. And these are people within their local communities, like, you know, like Kathy, and, you know, there's a group of people that are interested in improving the health of women and in infants, and so they make up, you know, the coalition in their local counties, and, you know, they engage in their community and, you know, look at issues locally and, you know, work to find prenatal care for all women.
So it takes a village.
Yes, it does.
The federal government also has its WIC program providing nutrition for women, infants, and children. Do you refer women to WIC often? Do you collaborate with the federal government in this respect?
Absolutely. Nearly 100% of our clients are referred to WIC. It's on our checklist. You know, we serve 17,000 pregnant women and babies each year, and when we do our record reviews, we do find that 99 to 100% of our families we've talked to about WIC to make sure they're connected if they want to be.
And at the grocery store now, you can even see items on the shelf that are like they have the WIC seal of approval. So I guess you're working like with the large supermarket chains and stuff like that as part of the coalition to get the word out. That's interesting. Florida is a very large state, both in terms of population and land mass. Are there different factors across the state that contribute to infant mortality, or are they all pretty uniform wherever you go? I think you've already said they're pretty uniform. It's low birth rate.
Well, definitely for black women, I think Kathy said this, that prematurity and low birth weight are the leading cause. For white infants, it's birth defects and then low birth weight. But the causes of death are pretty much in the same order. But we do have, you know, like you said, a great and very diverse population. So sometimes, you know, rural areas may have, people in rural areas may have difficulty getting to some resources, you know, but the Healthy Start coalitions in those areas definitely work, you know, within their environments to figure out the ways to get those women in and to be seen by providers and be monitored if warranted.
How have you dealt with, or have you had to deal with, funding cuts on the state level? I guess who wants to address that one? I guess I know all state agencies have dealt with funding cuts to one degree or another.
Well, this is Kathy, and locally we just took a $209,000 cut, partially due to sequestration as well as other funding allocation issues, and so it is a challenge. We had some of our non-recurring funds from the legislature restored to recurring this year, so that helped to soften some of the blow. But we will lose four positions. We've lost one in-house, and we'll lose three service provider positions potentially, unless we can, you know, part of the job of a coalition is to fundraise, so who knows what we can come up with as emergency funds. But that's the impact that we're seeing this fiscal year.
Do you think implementing the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, will help your jobs?
More people, from what I can see right now, more people will be insured and have access to care. Of course, there's a lot of pros and cons, and it's a very complex issue. But overall, if you're going to simplify it, if more families have access to care, then the pros will outweigh the cons.
And Margaret, what do you say about that?
It's going to be a new day. It looks like with the insurance being available to more people, and so we'll see how that looks.
And Dr. Cheryl Clark, you've got the last word because we're almost out of time. You think Obamacare will be good for Florida's moms and babies?
I'm a data person, so I'll just look at the data and follow the trends and report to you probably a year or two from now.
Very, very good answer. We are out of time. Thank you very much, Dr. Cheryl Clark, Margaret Rankin, RN, and Kathy Tamuta with Healthy Start of Southwest Florida. Thanks for joining us. When we come back, baseball at FGCU. And beyond, Neil Conan. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU.